Introduction. Dorothy Kilgallen's longtime butler, James Clement, answered the door to her lavish townhouse on East 68th Street in New York City in the late morning on a colder-than-normal November 8th, 1965, 17 days shy of Thanksgiving. As a stiff wind hit him in the face, Clement was alarmed when a flood of FBI agents, or those stating they were FBI agents, swarmed into the hallway. Clement, his voice tempered with a bit of fear, inquired as to why they were there, but received no explanation. The brawny men headed for the third floor. This is where Clement had already been surprised to discover, after a thorough search of the townhouse, that the dead body of the woman he had loved like a sister was not in the third floor bathroom, where he had been the first one to discover it much earlier, but was now in the master bedroom adjacent to her dressing room. Realizing the 52-year-old Kilgallen's body had been moved, he informed the agents of this strange development, but was told not to say anything to anyone about where she had been first located or their presence in the townhouse. Clement, a mild-mannered but strong man of character, had been hired by Kilgallen and her husband Richard Colmar after she was impressed with him and his wife Evelyn, an excellent cook, at a friend's dinner party. He kept asking questions as the men flittered about, faces stern, all business, but was ignored. The agents informed him that Kilgallen, best known at the time as the What's My Line television star, had apparently died of an accidental drug overdose. But the butler did not believe this could be possible. Several hours would elapse before New York City detectives and the medical examiner entered the townhouse. But what bothered Clement most was watching the agents confiscate boxes of Kilgallen's papers and documents and carry them away. Sweating profusely, the butler, who wore a pressed white waiter's jacket when guests arrived at the townhouse for social gatherings, raised his hands in protest. He then confronted the man who appeared in charge, but the actions only prompted a warning. Keep your mouth shut. What were the FBI agents searching for? Why had they so suddenly appeared within hours of Kilgallen's main hairdresser, Mark Sinclair, discovering her body in the bedroom around 9 a.m.? She had asked him to drop by the townhouse to fix her hair for an appointment at her youngest son Carrie's school. In a videotaped interview years later, Sinclair, a muscular gay man originally from Florida, said he had walked into the dressing room where Kilgallen had a clothes closet and where he usually fixed her hair. The room was located between the pink bathroom and the master bedroom. Sinclair recalled, "When I entered, she was not in that room. So I turned on my curling irons and I walked into the adjacent bedroom, not thinking she would be there." The master bedroom was near the black room, the townhouse living room, black in color from floor to ceiling, and adorned with white draperies and bright green rug. This room was used for watching television, playing records, and hosting game parties. Displayed among other memorabilia was a large set of toy banks Richard had collected. Kilgallen and Richard had not slept in the master for some time. "She hated that bedroom," Sinclair declared, "and we only used it because of the dressing room, or we would have never used it at all." Kilgallen normally slept in her private office, the Cloop, on the fifth floor, Sinclair explained. Richard slept in a bedroom on the fourth floor. Sinclair described what he discovered. "She was sitting up in bed, and I walked over to the bed and touched her, and I knew she was dead right away. The bed was spotless. She was dressed very peculiarly. I've never seen her dressed like that before. She always was in pajamas and old socks, and her makeup was off, and her hairpiece was off and everything. She was completely dressed like she was going out. The hair was in place, the makeup was on, the false eyelashes were on." Sinclair added, "The matching peignoir and robe, a book laid out on the bed, a drink on the table, the light was on, the air conditioning was on, though you didn't need an air conditioner. You would have had the heat on. and she was always cold. And why she had the air conditioning on, I don't know. Sinclair, who believed that perhaps someone had turned on the air conditioner to keep the body a certain temperature, said the glass was on the right-hand side, way away, way over from where Kilgallen was positioned. He added that the book was turned upside down. It wasn't in the right position where, if you'd been reading, you'd lay it down, and it was laid down so perfectly. Sinclair continued to describe the scene. Rigor mortis had set in on one hand, the right hand, and it had drawn up the covers a little bit, and there was lipstick on the left sleeve of the bolero jacket, and the light was on, and she was sitting up. I went back in the dressing room, picked up the intercom, and rang for James, the butler. I said, "James, I am unable to wake Miss Kilgallen. Could you please come up?" He ran up the stairs. I could hear him. He came up the front stairs, and he ran like he was very excited, and of course the door was locked. But I had come in from the back door. I didn't think they expected me. No one knew I was coming. And this was before 9:30 in the morning. 9:05. So I opened the door to the bedroom, and James came in. And at that time, I noticed a sheet of paper laying on the floor that had been pushed under the door. And James came in, and he was very flustered. He wasn't himself at all. The FBI's presence in Kilgallen's lavish townhouse and Clement and Sinclair's chilling details mark the starting point for determining whether Kilgallen, called by the New York Post the most powerful female voice in America, and by Ernest Hemingway, one of the greatest female writers in the world, died of an accidental drug overdose, committed suicide, or was murdered in a perplexing fashion by enemies intent on silencing her. If the latter was true, the trail led back to a somber day in February 1964, when the man who assassinated the man who allegedly assassinated President John F. Kennedy stood trial for his crime.